Welcome to the podcast. This is Dave Say, graphic designer.
I'm photographer Sid Caesar.
And it's May 26, 2011, Thursday. Yeah. And we have a special guest today.
We do. We've got special guests in the house.
Would you like to introduce the guests?
Yes, we have Nashua's Alderman at Large, Mark Cookson, who we've been on his show a couple of different times in the past.
Yeah, I think you've been on at least three times, haven't you?
I think so.
Yeah. At least.
I think so.
At
and least. So we promised that we would get him on, and then everything, like, I became lazy, and I kept not, like, scheduling him and not emailing him, and I'm like, I'll get right on it.
I don't think it was so much laziness as it was absent-mindedness.
Just business.
Yeah, I get
it. You know, we'll, like, I'll do it when I get home, and then I get home, and then I'm like, wait, I have to eat dinner first, and then I'm like, I'll email after dinner, and then
Sarah's
like,
play video games.
And exactly. Then, it's like, you know, Wednesday nights are Halo night, so, you know, like, I'm in Halo mode.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're just winging this live.
We are.
So to speak. Let's see. We've got a few things on the table, and then we're just going to spend the rest of the time talking to Mark and finding out what exactly an alderman is. Maybe probe a little bit into his background and find out his thoughts on things of the arts. Last week when we had Picker Building open house.
Yes, last Saturday, the 21st.
Yeah. How'd it go for you?
It went pretty good. It turned out like it was the only day of the week that wasn't raining.
Yeah.
It was really nice out, and I think we had a lot of people. We probably didn't have as many people as the second floor. That's always an issue. But it was good, and we just kind of hung out. And we had two guest stars that we sort of broke out, and we set them up, and the Muppets were present. And we had signs that went up each floor, and it was, you know, like, please come to the fourth floor. And you know, we had all kinds of support behind the signs. It's like, you're almost there. I have faith in you. Yeah. And then you make it to the top, and you walk through the door, and we had the internet sensations set up so people could see them. And we took some pictures with people. And
did anyone recognize them from
Actually, you know what? A couple did, but more didn't understand what was going on.
They were more
They're like, what's with the puppets? And I'm like, oh, you haven't heard?
So did you have to explain it to people? Or
a little bit, yeah. I tried not to go into it. And then most people, they would come in and we'd explain it to them, and then they'd laugh. And then as they were leaving, they would see the little thing we have outside in the hallway.
Yep.
And they'd stop and read that. And then they'd be like, oh, now I understand.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it was pretty good.
Impressions?
Of the, it seemed to go pretty well.
A lot of people. How many did you get, you think?
Let me think on dead air. I would say over 50.
Nice.
Yeah, which is pretty good. When we do the art walk, if we can get a fourth of what comes up to the second floor. So usually, like, when they do the art walk, the second floor usually gets about 200 to 250, almost 300 people at times.
Yeah.
And if we can get, like, 60 to 70 of those people, that's pretty good. And most people just don't want to huff it all the way up four flights of stairs. And you can hear them. You know, they get to the third floor, and then they see a sign for the fourth, and they're like, no. And then you just hear them turn around, and they go right back downstairs. Yeah. Especially when it's like in the middle of July or August, when it's 1,000 degrees up here, and you can feel the temperature dropping, or, you know, like going up by 20 degrees every time you go up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
They get to the third floor, and they're like, no. And off they go. So, yeah. But it was good. I thought it was good. We had a lot of people that came in that I like it when people come in just to say hi, you know, like they come in every time for art walk. They come in anytime we do an open house. And they just like knowing that I'm still around, and I like knowing that I'm still around.
Again, you're cementing the legend.
Exactly.
Exactly. I think there's a photographer on the fourth floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sid.
And, so you came.
Yep.
And then you kind of took off for a while, and you were sort of doing the rounds in the building.
I guess this is the third Picker Building open house type thing I've been to.
Yeah.
And usually I just hang out with you, you know, for a while, and then I go and wind around to see what else is going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know how I've been working on these artist websites, or trying to figure out how to crack the affordable website without losing my shirt in market? So, like, I walked around this time just to kind of see, like, how people were doing their pitches, because this has been a problem, or a challenge, as it should say, with meeting the low price point. Because you can make a website pretty cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
However, you still need the content, and you still need the photography, and you still need to know what the artist wants to say.
Yep.
And most artists, like, you know, a lot of people, don't know exactly what their message is. And so it ends up taking a lot of time, you know, my time, that to figure out what that is. And invariably, there's a lot of back and forth. And you can't meet the low price point unless you figure out exactly you know, how to solve that problem. The content problem is the big problem. What are people going to say? And people aren't thinking about that when they're thinking website. They're thinking, oh, I need a work. If they even have gone as far to look into how much it costs, they have an idea like maybe a server is, you know, maybe, you know, $10, $20 a month. Mm-hmm. And then they had to somehow get this thing called a website, and they're not sure exactly what it is, but they know they need someone to make it for them, and they have a budget of maybe, you know, $250, ideally.
Right. Yeah.
Because they're not making a lot of money off of the art yet. Right. They're just getting started or so forth. And then typically, if you're pricing a website out, it's like it's starting $1,500 just for the amount of time it takes. And if you want a nice website, you're talking about maybe $7,500, $8,000. I'd say $10,000 be about average for the amount of time it takes. Because you need a tech guy, you need a designer, you need a project manager. You need at least those three people if you want to get it done within a specific time frame.
Right.
If you don't have any of those things, you know, then the project lingers on. And this is where the trouble happens for me, because I had to try to like wrap the project up, because I'm only going to get $250 out of it. If I put 20 hours of work into that, like, I'm losing my shirt. It's not a good exchange of time.
Yep.
But anyway, long story short, I went around just to see how artists were presenting themselves, and so I asked people like what the spiel was from where I came up here and asked you. You have a spiel? Maybe you had a spiel.
Like people, your elevator pitch?
Yeah, well, not even that. I mean, like, hi, I'm this artist and I make this. Here's some of my work. Mm-hmm. You know, something is along those lines. And most people were like, they would say, welcome. There's the cheese platter. And enjoy. And so I would see some people wander around, or I would wander around and look. I would engage in some conversations also, just to kind of get a feel for the personality. So this is probably the first year that I actually recognized more people than from last year, because like I'd been here a couple times before.
Yeah.
So it was good to see how people were evolving.
Good.
But it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I got the sense that it was more of a event where people were coming around just to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much of a buying opportunity, like a holiday type thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a nice thing to do on Saturday.
Yeah.
Walk around and things like that. I saw Mark downstairs too. Like, Mark, what did you think?
I thought it was great. I had a great time here.
Yeah.
Spent several hours. I went down to Carolyn Gaudette down on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
Spent an hour in there talking with her.
Uh-huh.
Went over to Dan Splane.
Yeah.
Place test of time photography. Not to.
we're gonna rename this building the Kodak Building pretty soon. Yeah. There are so many photographers in here; it's crazy.
So I talked with Dan. Actually, I talked with Dan's mother for about an hour. When she found out I was an alderman, then oh dear,
you know? Really?
So yeah, it was an hour conversation with her, and then I finally made it up to the fourth floor, and made it into Sid's studio, and that's when the magic started to happen.
The magic. Nice.
Yeah, I've always found it hard for me. Like the second floor, you're full. You've got, you know, pottery and jewelry, and you've got things you can walk in and you can buy and you can walk out with. And my big thing has always been, when people come in, they're not sure what exactly it is I do. You know, they walk in and they see stuff on the wall and they're like, okay, so is this an art show? Is this a gallery space? You know, and then you have to say, no, I, you know, I'm a portrait photographer. I take pictures of people. And so what I usually try to do is make sure, like, as they're coming in that little hallway space, I've got all kinds of propaganda out there. So as they're coming in, they can sort of like glance at it maybe and get an idea. And then once they turn around and leave, then maybe they can pick up some of that propaganda and sort of, you know, head downstairs with it and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So usually for us, it's like, the way it went Saturday, it's just kind of, we hang out. I try to greet everybody, and I think I did a pretty good job. I know you were kind of watching, seeing how I was doing, you know, every once in a while he was like, you know, and usually pretty, I think it goes pretty well. I think some people, you know, I think.
Do you notice a lot of collateral is gone? Like
a lot of business cards were gone.
Nice.
And then lapel pins.
And the pins. People love those pins.
How'd the candy go over?
So, and the candy got wiped out.
Except for the yellow.
Except for the yellow Starburst. Nobody likes yellow Starburst.
There were other colors?
Yeah. They took them all. There was orange and pink, and yeah, those are gone. Everybody, Sarah was even noticing. She's like, everybody leaves the yellow. Nobody likes the yellow.
Huh.
And then she let me get some Hershey Kisses so that, you know, If they weren't gone, I could treat myself a little bit.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
What a treat.
Isn't it? I'm telling you. But, so I thought it went pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought it went pretty
good. From an outside perspective, I thought it was a great event. I thought that a lot of people came through. But you're right. A lot of people were coming through just to see what was happening at 99 Factory Street or 99 Pine Street Extension, because it's really the hidden gem of the city, the hidden gem of the arts community. A lot of stuff is taking place right here that we recognize, but there's not a easy way to get back here. Yeah. Not until we put that atrocious Broad Street Parkway through.
Are they still talking about that?
No, talking about it. I mean, the damn thing's going to be built. 2011. They're kicking it off both ends of one on Broad Street near the Dairy Queen. You know where that one is.
Yeah.
Yeah, right there. Yeah. That's where one of the entrance points is. And then on the southern end, it's going to be right there at Kinsley and West Hollis and Pine Street. So it's coming right through. I mean, the river crossing is just right out your window.
Weird.
Yeah.
You're going to have a bridge there.
Yeah. What? And it's going around the other side of Technology Park, right?
Yeah, it's going to go through the boiler house. The chimneys, the chimney with the mill yard painted on there, that's still going to be there. But the boiler house that's right next to it is the roadway's going right through it.
Yeah.
Huh.
Like they're taking half of that big area, that big building down.
Okay.
So the left-hand side is going to stay there.
Yep.
And then somebody told me that the part with the brick is going to stay, and then everything that's metal is going to get knocked down. So it's going to go between that smokestack and then the building right next to us where all those meetings take place.
Yeah, one of the buildings is actually being moved.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so when you get to the end of, I don't know the name of the building, I'm sorry, but right there in that property, it's going to be picked up, moved, and put next to the NIMCO building.
Wow.
So, I mean.
That's nuts.
It is. Wow. It's crazy.
That is crazy.
So the entrance is going to be one of the entrances is on Broad Street by the Dairy Queen?
Yep. It's kind of right near the railroad.
Oh, that's right. There's a railroad. So are you going to use the railroad as part of the pathway?
Or? It's the Broad Street Parkway is going to mirror the railroad, but it's not going to be part of the railroad. The railroad has a right-of-way that you can't enter. So they're going to tear down that building right there on Broad Street, right before you get to the railroad that had the outdoor power supply.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
entire building is gone.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
So that's where it goes in. It follows the rail and follows the path of the river, and then eventually makes its way over to, this side of the mill yard, crosses the river, goes through the mill yard, through the boiler house. A couple things are moved, a couple buildings, the rail station, which has the Congregational Church.
Mm-hmm.
The end of that is going to be demolished, and they're going to put the facade, the Greek-style revival, up on the part that exists, that remains.
Yeah.
They're going to rebuild that structure there.
Well, this is a big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. What's interesting is that rail station is the only rail station in the state of New Hampshire. I mean, the thing was built between 1860 and 1865. It's the only standing one in the state of New Hampshire that has that Greek revival on the end. And we're going to go through. The Historic Commission for the state said, yeah, you can go ahead and knock down that last quarter of it and then re-put it up. I mean, it doesn't lose all of its historic importance, but a significant amount of it, because that was the last standing structure.
Wow. Oh. I don't even think I know where that building is.
Oh, we'll show it to you on the way out.
Yeah, okay.
It's right near the Bronson apartments, right across the street from that.
Hmm. Huh. Well, wow.
That's nuts.
Is it like a major road, or...
It sounds big, doesn't it? It's just a two-lane road, the Broad Street Parkway.
Oh, okay.
No, it's a two-lane road.
So I'm wondering if it's scooterable, because that might be an ideal way for me.
Oh, man, what a quick,
You go whoosh.
Yeah.
With that being said, pieces of it will be good. I mean, you'll be able to get to 99 Pine Street Extension very quickly because of the parkway.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
We'll be able to get to Dairy Queen really fast.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, blizzards.
Nashville becomes a little more intimate.
And I get a little more fatter. That's wow. That's crazy.
So, you want to talk about the Arts Commission stuff, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, should we? I mean, we should bring him in, like, officially. Like,
oh, we should.
Yeah, you know, like, who's the third person talking?
Yeah, so we have Alderman Mark Cookson, and I'm not exactly sure what an alderman does. Would you like to say a few words about yourself?
A lot of people wonder what an alderman does.
What does an alderman do?
Yeah, from a not, like, I'm not, into politics.
Yeah, me either.
Like, explain it for the loser guy like me that doesn't get into this. Like, what does an alderman do?
An alderman is responsible for the legislative aspect of the city. We write the laws, the ordinances that you have to abide by as citizens within the city. So we put stop signs up. We say that you have to pay this much to build something. And okay. Yeah, we do the legislative aspect of it. We put dog parks in the city. A little bit of everything. But we're the legislative branch of local government.
Oh, all right. Okay.
As a refresher, what are the other branches of government?
The legislative, that would be executive and judicial.
So the legislative, what was that? There was that thing on Saturday morning cartoons. What was it? There was a song.
Bill.
Yeah, conjunction junction.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, conjunction.
Yeah, that's the era. So the legislative branch. So how do the laws begin? By someone like raises an issue, and
if somebody raises an issue, says we think we should have this or it should be done this way, and we submit a piece of legislation, and it goes for review. It goes off to committee, and we debate it, and then it comes back to the full board. And if the full board, 15 of us, if the majority of that board determines that it's a good piece of legislation, it becomes law.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Interesting.
So, like, if there's a street that needs a stop sign, and everybody agrees that, you know, too many kids are running out there and stuff like that. So, do they initially complain to City Hall, and then City Hall alerts you to the matter? Is that how it goes?
Sid. Wonderful.
Thank you.
You're all happy now. You've been recognized by the alderman.
Yeah.
We've got different types of aldermen. We've got ward aldermen, and we've got aldermen at large. We've got nine wards within the city, and each ward has a particular alderman. Typically, what you would do is if you have a concern about a particular issue in the area that you live in, you would go to your ward alderman and say, Mr. or Mrs. Ward Alderman, I'd like a stop sign here at the end of this street. That ward alderman would say, oh, I think that's a good idea or whatever, and then starts the process.
Uh-huh.
You also have six aldermen at large, and those aldermen represent the entire city. So while you have a ward alderman, if that ward alderman isn't as responsive as you'd like them to be, you can reach out to an alderman at large and sort of help grease the wheels.
He's like spec ops.
Yeah.
when the other one doesn't do their job, then
Council of Nine.
Exactly. Yes. He's like the guy they go to, like, you know, when the varmints are all over the town and they need somebody to run them out.
Yeah.
So they're like, the sheriff isn't doing anything.
So you're kind of like Judge Dredd in the League and the League of Justice rolled into one.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. I could see why you would want to be an alderman. Did you have a choice in becoming an alderman, or were you kind of like drafted somehow?
Oh, you know, I think I was more like Sid when I started. I didn't have a political bone in my body.
Yeah.
I didn't follow it. I moved up here to Nashua in 98, and it wasn't until there were some things going on in the area that I lived in where I didn't think I was being represented.
Mm.
And I said, if I'm going to bitch about it, I better do something about it. And I decided to run. And that was 6 years ago. And I ran for a ward alderman, so I got real intimate with knowing the issues in the ward.
Uh-huh.
And it worked out really well. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed going and helping, meeting people, helping them with their issues, you know, being responsive to their needs. And that's where it started. And I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed helping people. And then this last November, I decided to run at large. And it's been a great learning curve. It's really helped me understand what the issues are in the city, not just within one specific area within the city. And so, but that's how it started. I didn't think I was being represented, and I wanted to make a difference.
Awesome. What were you doing at the time? Or is being an alderman a full-time job?
No. Alderman's part-time. Well, okay. Not even part-time. I mean, it's an evening gig. You head over to City Hall at about 7:30 in the evening. You spend a couple hours there, a couple nights a week, depending on which committees you're on. And that's what you do. The rest of the time is filled up with your regular day job. And at the time, I was working with Digital Compact HP as an instructional designer, performance consultant, helping create training programs and improve organizational efficiencies. And I figured I had a unique skill set that could be utilized in government. And I still believe that. I think some of the things that I bring to the table aren't necessarily brought by other individuals on the board. We each have our own talents, but I really think my skill set and critical thinking skills bring some issues to light.
Yeah, I was reading your bio earlier, and it sounded like you were doing organizational development as one of your gigs that you do.
Org development, absolutely. Performance technology, change management, just helping people, everybody, change affects us every single day. Mm-hmm. And it's just a way of getting people to either accept it or become responsive again. Whenever you encounter change, you get that dip. Yeah. And people, I don't like this. I don't want it. We were fine the way we were. So there's some denial in there. Yeah. And then you slowly build that momentum back up. Oh, wow. And maybe this is good. And so that's what I do.
Yeah, that sounds like a great match for government, actually.
We need more of us like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know a few people who do organizational development work. They kind of are attracted to some of the stuff that I do because I do productivity forums and stuff like that are supposed to be on the individual level.
I like the stuff you're doing in Europe right now. Are you talking all the A4s and...
Yeah, like all the numbers. They're all exciting. A4 paper, frame, two color. It struck me there's a difference between like someone who might be a consultant and someone who is actually like an organizational change management type person. The consultants are kind of like the generals, like dialing in like airstrikes from like 1,000 miles away, where the organizational development people, they're the squad leaders. They're going in there and
I'm rolling up my sleeves every single day.
You're in there, you're making the change happen, and you're framing things so people can understand them, engage with them on a positive and action-oriented, results-oriented level. And they feel that they're doing it themselves. It's not someone telling them what to do or like, you're doing it wrong. You need to follow this McKinsey report that tells you how to structure yourselves. So you're lean or so you're ISO 9001. all these sort of things ISO. That come from outside instead of like working it, from within.
I tell you what, local government takes forever though. I mean, in business and industry, it's change needs to happen. It happens overnight. Government, oh my God, it's painfully slow. You're 3 months at the least. It's painful.
Now, is that because it just has to go through so many people?
Yeah, you get a first reading at a full board of aldermen. It gets assigned to committee that might not meet for another week or 2 weeks after that particular date. It gets talked about in committee, and if it doesn't get resolved that night, you come back at the next meeting that might be scheduled next month or in 2 weeks or the next month, and then finally gets back to the full board. And if the full board doesn't think it's a good idea or doesn't agree with what the committee thought, it could just be killed. It takes a lot of work. It's a lot of people, a lot of negotiating behind the scenes, scratch my back and do this for it happens.
That's awesome. So we have we can use that to frame the Arts Commission that just started. So that came about, was that primarily through City Arts Nashua? Or I know like City Arts Nashua is are they kind of involved?
City Arts Nashua is a 501c3 in the city, and it was identified a couple of years ago that we needed to look into whether an arts commission would be appropriate for the city, a city this large, second largest city in the state of New Hampshire, should there be an arts commission. In 2008, there was a we invited a bunch of artists over to the community college, and you know, I facilitated a group that day, and Liz Rachoppi was there, and from City Arts Nashua.
I think I was there.
Yeah,
you were there. Didn't they brought somebody in? There was a woman that was talking, and didn't they brought somebody in to from outside to
exactly
she looked
they
over
in a facilitator
and then we
broke out into groups, and we talked about it that afternoon, and and we came back and got those results, and lo and behold, somebody said there should be an arts commission. And for 2 years after that, we put an arts steering committee, a cultural planning arts steering committee together, and we sort of defined what an arts commission might look like within this in the city. And it was last year I introduced a piece of legislation, an arts commission for the city of Nashua, and it went through all the committee work, and it was decided, it was approved unanimously by the Board of Aldermen that there would be an arts commission in the city. And now we're just getting our feet wet right now. The group's just been identified. The people are going to participate. We're getting ready for our first organizational meeting. And the fun starts now.
So is this sort of a voice that goes between the art public and City Hall?
Wow, another great question, Sid. Man, are you? it's almost like I fed you that. It's
knocking almost, them out of the park.
You know, it's not just a voice; it's actually the face. And FACE is an acronym. It stands for Facilitate, Advocate, Coordinate, and Educate.
Nice.
And we're going to be the face of the artistic community and the cultural assets of the city. And we're going to educate the Board of Aldermen. We're going to educate the mayor. We're going to educate the public. Okay. And we're going to make sure that we understand as a community how important arts are for the city.
Huh. That's awesome.
Is there like a standard civics argument for arts in the cities that people bandy about? Or how do you, I guess, Mark, what's some of your thoughts on how the arts relate to...
Well, you know, I'm a musician at heart. I mean, I've been playing trumpet for almost 30 years.
Wow.
And just picked up the horn again, and I'm playing regularly now. I enjoyed band and concert and symphonic band when I was in high school. I took art classes. And from an educational perspective, those are the first things that are being cut. You know, we're not seeing those classes, or you have to pay to take those classes in public education. And so there's that aspect of me that says arts are so vitally important. I mean, if you read my bio, you also know that I was a math instructor.
Yep.
So math and music really closely correlate. And I see a lot of math in the music that I play. And I love it, whether it's chord structure or whether it's harmonies. And I see, you know, as basic as quarter notes, eighth notes, half notes, whole notes. Art is just so vitally important to helping people touch a different side of themselves and really understand what it is. So that aspect gets me excited about art. The other aspect is from an economic development standpoint, and this is coming from a city perspective, is that as we go in and out of economic upturns and downturns, upticks and downturns, communities that have an artistic and culturally strong part of the city, they have a strong artistic background, a strong cultural background, those are the communities that come out of those economic downturns better than they went in. And you know, there's a lot of research that goes into that, that says, you know, a community that relies on their arts, or their music, their visual arts, their singing, their performing arts, are just better suited to come out of that economic downturn. And I think we've got some of the most fabulous artists in the state, if not the country, right here sitting in the Picker Building. Honest to God, I think they're incredible. Some of the work is world renowned.
That's true.
So it's important to emphasize that from an economic standpoint.
Why is there such resistance to the arts, do you think? I mean, it's the first thing they cut.
It's the first thing that gets cut. I mean...
Is it that people haven't experienced the arts for themselves?
Possibly. Possibly. But I think some very difficult choices are put in front of the powers that be. whether it be your alderman, whether it be your Board of Education, they have to decide what in that priority list of people who get money or services that are going to be funded in the city, what gets serviced. People are going to be in an uproar if their trash isn't picked up every Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you don't have an arts community or a performing arts center, maybe you just go up to Manchester or go down to Lowell.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So it's prioritizing. But the reason I put the legislation in for an arts commission is because I think it is vitally important. And that's why I want to educate the public, educate the Board of Aldermen, and make sure that they see the importance that they play within our community.
Mm.
Mm.
And that's my goal.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So how does the individual artist who may not understand what an arts commission can do for them, how would a typical artist might engage, an example artist? Let's say it's me.
Yep.
And like I'm looking at an arts commission and I'm wondering how it's relevant to me as a developing artist. What should my first question be? What would
I guess it really depends on what level you're coming in at. What we hope to be able to do is we hope to be able to facilitate some of facilitate the network that might be helpful and advantageous to either a new or young and upcoming artist who needs to really reach out and understand what's happening in the community, who's doing it, and what are those some of the best examples that are out there. You know, I always use the Nashua Symphony as an example of things that are going well. Okay, the Nashua Symphony has this thing called the ripple effect. They go out and they work with our education. They work in the school system, and they have a group of students in an English class create poetry on a particular theme. Then they'll have an art class design murals or pictures or photographs or whatever the case may be, whatever they're working on, that illustrates what is in the poetry.
Okay.
And then the last aspect of it is there's a piece of music that's commissioned and, an original piece that's written for the Nashua Symphony Orchestra to perform, but also they've got the students from the two high schools or the middle schools that come in and join them, sit right down next to them, and perform with them. So the Nashua Symphony is doing a lot of things well, where they're reaching out into the community and they're touching a lot of different English, literature, poetry, arts, and then performing. So why can't we use that as an example for maybe the Northern Ballet? Maybe they do the same thing. So instead of just limiting it at literature, art, and music, now let's have the Northern Ballet come in and perform and have a dance group from the school, illustrate what they hear in dance moves.
Nice. Yeah.
So, and then we've got all different kinds of groups that could play on to that as well.
Oh.
But it's really facilitating that network of things that are available.
Yeah.
Things that are going well, things that could be imitated so that you're not reinventing the wheel every single time. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
Yeah.
We're advocating for the arts, when budget comes up and we want to make sure that people have the money to continue to do the work that they're doing, and there are some grants that are available. I want to advocate for the artists and make sure that they're able to continue to do what they're doing.
Mm. So it's like art as the life of or the ability to reach into a community, maybe add to the community's sense of identity.
Yeah.
Add to their sense of getting outside of like their suburban backyards and connecting with other creative endeavors, other people who are making things, doing things, making change. And those are the kind of things that kind of come to mind. When I think of artists, like, stereotypically, I'm thinking of the, a shy person, introverted person, possibly, who's working on, has a relatively well-controlled, well-defined world, because we've worked really hard to get to that point, but no one will bother us, so we can do our work, and we feel confident enough that what we're doing is okay, it's good. It's part of the destiny we've chosen for ourselves.
Yeah.
And that kind of works counter to the whole networking thing.
It does.
Because you're so used sometimes as an artist or an artistically inclined person to being not being part of like a mainstream approach to things or not part of the mainstream agenda.
So for that introvert who might not want to really utilize the entire vision of what an arts commission might be able to do, you know, and really focusing on that economic development standpoint, we've got 30% of our businesses downtown are vacant.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the opportunity, you know, with an arts commission to really say, okay, we've got a building at this particular location on Main Street. Why don't we fill it up with art so it doesn't look like a piece of vacant, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it
yeah.
it looks good from a storefront standpoint, you know? So things like that, we could really promote some of the artists and some of the pieces of work that they do, whether it be stained glass, pottery, photographs, watercolors, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get a street band out there too while we're at it and make a little noise.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. So the idea that the arts can be part of a vibrant community, and like, you know,
we have to be a vibrant community
by existing, by, you know, doing the arts can do their part. I guess that's
they, how they can.
And the Arts Commission is one of the gateways toward that aspect of things. That's how I'm kind of interpreting it right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
But we think it's a good thing. We've got some good people behind it. We've got Liz Rachoppi. We've got Frank Tees from the Nashua Bank. We've got Chris Williams from the Nashua Chamber of Commerce. We've got Bonnie Gersio right down here on the second floor in the Picker Building. Charlie Matthews from the library is a trustee of the Hunt Building as well. Just some really fabulous people. Jillian Hinkle is going to come on board from Community Music School.
Cool.
Paula Flam from Spartans Drum and Bugle Corps. So we're looking at a bunch of different aspects and bringing in a lot of talent.
Nice.
Good.
That's very exciting.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's nice to know that there's going to be some sort of arts presence like at City Hall. You know, I think that's important. I mean, I know when I was working with City Arts Nashua, it was hard enough just to get time to get in front of the mayor. But then, you know, like, I think that, I like the idea of
we've got the time now.
You know, now if we've got something that we need to talk about, we can go to a designated group that will, you know, actively try to get FaceTime with her and say, you know, we represent da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and these are some of the things that we want to talk about, and I think that's good. It's exciting.
It is.
You know? I'm excited.
It is. Just from, you know, I mean, I did some stuff with Cedar Arts Nashua, and then it's nice to see, you know, what something that they had talked about, like, it would be really nice to get into becoming more of, like, something that's silly, city-affiliated. And
just trying to make things a little more visible. So many times things just fall on. If you don't have the right people to advocate for you.
Yep.
And you need those people, so let's put those people in place, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yep.
You'll get the FaceTime, you'll get the issues raised, and we're going to try to solve them. You know, we're not passing the buck.
That's awesome.
This is the one-stop shop.
That's awesome. And there are a lot of artists out there that don't need help, but just they need a voice of some kind, I think.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to voice it themselves.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, what I can do, or I have the natural inclination to not get involved with things. So, but it's the idea of, like, figuring out how people plug together.
Dave's becoming an extrovert.
Listen to him.
I wouldn't bet on it. Well, one thing I've realized recently about my blog. Yeah, you know, that sounds so pretentious, but about my blog. I've been trying to figure out what it's been about for a long time. And one of the insights recently was someone pointed out to me, like, Dave, you're totally an artist. And I never thought of myself as an artist because my background, my training has been engineering and programming and to some extent graphic design, but that's more commercial stuff. That's I think of it more as visual problem solving rather than any kind of, you know, artistic expression. Although I've learned to break down emotional type stuff into the corresponding, you know, graphics or visual stimuli. Okay, if you want to be sad, you can do this. If you want to be happy, you want to do this. If you want to make this message more poignant, you can do that. You can play this music. You know, that kind of stuff. But So, like, the writing I've been doing has been largely, though, about the struggle. Maybe that's the artistic part, because I keep writing about the struggle. And it occurred to me yesterday that actually what I write about isn't so much design, development, productivity, inspiration, empowerment, which is the key words I usually kind of associate with the kinds of things I write about. But it really is about the struggle. It's really about trying to figure out how to achieve these certain things that aren't necessarily, you know, just cut and dried engineering challenges. I'm not so much interested in technology as I am in the application of technology to get past something. Those are the kind of stories that really, you know, light me up. The ones when someone's trying to do something and they're facing these odds and they don't know where to go to get the help, but they figure it out. They meet the right person. Mm-hmm. They find a place where they can fit. They find a way to be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
They find a way that they can push themselves to achieve more than they could. Those kind of things, like, really get me. And in that context, I can appreciate what the Arts Council is doing. I mean, to create those connections with people, to create opportunities for people to network together.
Yeah.
And find, you know, they don't have to be in, like, in their basements, like, you know, sniffing paint all the time, you know, and working and suffering for their art. You know, they could go and go out and, you know, make an impact on somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, like, every once in a while, I get a nice email from somebody about how something that I've made, you know, has, like, impacted someone. Like,
yeah.
I got this cool email from someone who's mentoring a bunch of people who are at a non-government organization in southern Sudan.
Wow.
That are making, I said, like, I sent them some links to your work, and it totally inspired this dude to get out of his
phone. Wow.
And, like, then he shared it with the rest of his office, and now they're all yelling, EAP, EAP, which is some throwaway thing that I wrote in this post. But knowing that you can have that kind of effect makes me want to do more of that kind of thing. And I could see that being the same kind of impetus, like, for an artist, you know? I mean, you must have felt the same way when, like, you did the Muppet proposal. And initially you thought it was pretty funny and pretty cool, but then some people were really genuinely moved.
When I started getting emails from people that are just like, I'm crying and crying and crying. And, you know, I'm in my office in, you know, not the Sudan, but I'm in Greece, you know, like, my wife and I are in Greece and we just watched it and we cried. And then I got a video of a woman and her daughter. They recorded themselves watching the video on YouTube, crying. And then they sent me the video so that I could see when they start crying and, like, you know, at what point, you know, like, it became this, like, research thing. Like, okay, so in the video, like, what's the most teary-eyed moment, you know? And all of a sudden, and it just started crying. She was just like, this has moved me so much. She's like, I needed to show you how much this, like, moved.
That's,
you know? I was like,
wow.
That's cool.
Wow. Yeah.
So it is. And you're just like, and it's nice because in that particular case, it was something that I did, you know, for one person, and just everybody got a hold of that and they could see the genuine emotion that was part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's invigorating. It's like, you know, you just want to go off.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of like Dave walking around being like, yeah, I'm big in Sudan. What's up? I'm big in Japan. I'm Dave Say, and I'm big in the Sudan.
You know, it doesn't bother. what's the term? It's the things that are more important to me are on the one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Organizations don't really interest me.
Right.
But the individual reactions I can get from people. If I can make an impression from me to someone else.
Oh, you made an impression,
that's
Dave.
What I can do. Yeah, it's like, on this chair, this dent in the bottom of it. Yeah. And then the gym has made an impression in my credit card.
Everybody. Yeah, exactly.
That's doing any good. Anyway.
So tell us about, you were telling us before we started recording, how you got to teach people like, oh, I don't know, Christina Aguilera and Melissa Joan Hart. And so how did that come about?
Oh, God.
So, like, all right. So did you grow up in Florida?
I grew up in Florida.
Okay. And, like, when you were in school and stuff, like, what did you think you wanted to do?
Yeah.
Dead air. Okay. And I should know better than this because I've got my own radio show. But I still make... Okay. So
you were in music.
I was in music. I wanted to be a music performer. I was going to college to be to play professionally.
Oh.
And
wow.
I think it was my sophomore year, I discovered that I had a tremendous case of stage fright and that I could not get up in front of people and play.
Wow.
And so I had to change my major.
Wow.
And I remember my sister was a few years younger than me. She was 5 years younger than me. And my mom asked me to come back over and help her with her algebra class, I guess.
Hmm.
3 nights, I made my younger sister cry.
No.
On the third night, my sister, she goes, stop, just let me try it.
Wow.
And she does this algebraic equation, and she looks up at me, and she says, you should become a math teacher. So the next semester, I transferred to Tallahassee, Florida State, and I continued my math education degree.
Huh. Yeah, wow.
Up in Tallahassee. As soon as I graduated with my undergraduate, I went back in home, and I saw an ad in the paper to tutor at whatever, and so I answered the request, and it just so happened that the person who ran this tutoring firm was a Florida State graduate. I was hired on the spot,
nice.
Which was very fortunate.
Nice.
Yep. My very first gig was tutoring the Mickey Mouse Club over at MGM Studios in Orlando.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so it was Tony Luca, Carrie Russell, J.C. Chazet, Justin Timberlake, Brittany, Christina,
awesome,
probably a lot of others that I'm forgetting right now, but those are some of the names. And then across town, I tutored over at Nickelodeon, and I had Melissa Joan Hart. And, yeah, Clarissa Explains It All, and Teenage Witch. And
did you make any of them cry?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
So I
you know. You know what? Nice. Actually, they were the most phenomenal students.
Really?
By far the best students that I have ever taught in my entire life, because there was an incentive. If they did not do well in school, they did not get airtime.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They cut airtime for him if they didn't do well. So
it was measured in minutes, like on a show that they would actually.
Yeah, it was an hour long show, and they had to decide that they were going to sing this song, do this skit, dance this scene or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And
wow.
If they got anywhere from a C or below, if they didn't make an A or B in the class in any of the subjects, then their airtime was diminished.
That's fantastic.
Too bad they don't do that with like the cast of Saturday Night Live. You know, if you're not funny, you're not getting any airtime.
I don't know.
I wish they would.
I haven't watched Saturday Night Live.
Don't even bother.
I was just thinking, how could you apply that to kids? Because kids who aren't on TV, I imagine they want to be on the.
What about athletics? You know, athletics.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got kids.
You
got to
get great
football, but you can play with an F and.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know you could do that. I thought they had.
I think you can have an F in one semester, and and they won't penalize you.
Yeah.
Huh.
But there's motivation. There's something in there that's going to make them want to do well. You just have to find it and reach it.
Yeah. I mean, if you had a whole bunch of MMORPG playing kids, and if they got an A, they would get one free piece of epic gear. I mean, that'd be awesome. People are like, oh, I'm getting the air because I want my purple items.
Dave turns everything into a World of Warcraft comparison.
Yeah, apparently so.
it's incredibly compelling for certain people. Well, if you're a photographer or something like that, if you got to you get to use the 5D Mark II this week,
I can do that.
If you get an A in your courses, then you'll get access to our special locker of cool gear.
You gotta treat them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
You think they remember you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I went down to Boston to Midtown, Kennedy's Midtown, and saw one of my students play, Tony Luca.
Yeah.
TonyLuca.com, TonyLuca.com. Just incredible. He's an independent artist, and he's a phenomenal guitar player, great lyricist.
Wow.
And walked down there. Victoria, my wife, got a table for us, and right in front of the stage. And we're sitting there having dinner. Tony comes out and sits down at our table because we've got like an 8-top and it's only Victoria and I sitting there. He comes down there, sits and watches. He's like, can I sit here? Do you mind if I sit here? I said, no, that's fine. You can sit there. And I get up and I come around the table and I sit down next to him. And he's like, he's giving me one of those looks. What the hell's going on? And I said, you don't remember me, do you?
Uh-huh.
He said, oh, well, you look familiar. Well, I hadn't seen the kid in, 15 years.
Yeah.
And so he says, you look familiar. And I said, well, you know, what do you think? You know, I asked him some question about calculus. What's the derivative of this? He goes, holy crap, are you kidding me? So during his set that night, he actually made a comment. He stopped his set and he said, I want to introduce you to, you know, to Mark. He was my calculus tutor at Mickey Mouse Club years ago. Yeah, it was cool.
Oh. That's pretty awesome. Great. Oh,
look at that. Teacher to the stars.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
All these little secrets you find out.
How is the state of math education going in Nashua?
It's tough.
Is it tough?
It is. I don't want to be too critical, but I tutored a couple of students over the last several years, and I the fundamentals aren't being taught, or they're being missed, and they're I don't know what it is. I don't think the class sizes are too large. I don't know what it is, but the fundamentals aren't there, and they're suffering. The students are suffering year after year because they don't have the basics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's unfortunate, but my students, the ones that I tutored, continued good A's. Good grades.
Good.
So,
are you still tutoring?
I am.
Wow.
Oh. Absolutely.
Well, we had to talk about this sometime because, like, when I was a kid, like, I hated math.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
And it was my worst subject.
Yeah. And I liked physics because physics at least made some kind of sense. And then years later, I was reading Richard Feynman's book.
Okay.
And he was complaining about textbooks in this thing. And it occurred to me, was it my textbooks that were unclear? Because I remember when I'd read a math textbook and I would look at a sentence and it wouldn't be English. It would, and I don't mean that just in the sense like, you know, math doesn't make sense. It literally was a bad sentence. It was ambiguous.
Yeah.
It was grammatically incorrect. And it would not draw a clean line of reasoning from we're coming from this point to this point and this back to this thing. They could not write a clear sentence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because of that, I didn't grasp any of the concepts and it seemed kind of pointless. So, like, one of my long back-burned projects is to go back, start back with wherever you start with math. Number lines, I guess.
I can tutor you, Dave.
And, you know, figure out what the textbooks and then rewrite it.
You produce my show. I'll tutor you.
No. All right, we'll talk. Maybe we'll do a math show. But to figure out, like, really, you know, how it can be expressed in a way. So it could be a little bit, it could be more intuitive, or it could be at least written well.
Here's the one thing that I've learned is that the people learn in different ways, right?
Uh-huh.
So in order for me to be an effective teacher, I had to be able to explain the same thing 14 different ways. And that's what it is. And I've got visual learners. I've got auditory learners. Mm. I've got students that love to read books but don't listen to me when I speak.
Uh-huh.
I've got other people that, you know, listen intently, but they can't go back to the book and understand what they're supposed to do. So we've got to reach our students in a different way and engage them. Mm. And we can't rely just on a textbook. We can't rely just on experiential learning. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a combination. You've got to reach the student the way that they feel most comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Nice. Good. Good. All right. So good. So all right. So let's give Mark a couple of minutes of like contact time, just so if people want to get a hold of you. So now you're Alderman for all of Nashua. You're at large
city.
for the so for the local listeners of anybody in Nashua that might be listening and they want to get a hold of you or they want to, you know, contact you in some way, how can they find you on the interwebs?
AldermanCookson.com.
AldermanCookson.com,
all one word.
.com. And you have your own radio show.
I got my own radio show, WSMN 1590, every Thursday afternoon, 12 to 1, the Nashua Hour with Alderman Cookson. We talk about everything local, arts, budget, city politics, whatever you guys want to talk about, we talk about on the Nashua Hour. So that's every Thursday at 1 on 1590 AM and live streaming on my website, AldermanCookson.com.
That's awesome. And he brings in lots of guests, too. Like, usually he's got 2 to 3 guests per week.
Yeah.
That come in. So that's really cool that he lines all these people up to get them in there. It's probably what we should be doing.
We should. we're at podcast, 24, and we're still figuring out how this works.
Exactly.
Although you were listening to like the earlier one, one of the earlier ones a while ago. And
I listened comparing. I went back and listened to the very first one that we did. What a train wreck that was.
Because
you could even hear it in our voices. Like we were just like, hello, internet world. And then I listened to the last one. And what a difference. Like, we've become more comfortable just talking. And so, yep. like the other, the like the last one we did last week, like it just comes right on, and we just go. We're just it's the last. Like I'm gonna say, like the last dozen or so.
Yeah.
Maybe the last five or six, but it seems like when you listen to them, it seems like they've all been recorded at one time, and then we're just cutting them up and segmenting them.
Yeah.
So there's this like continuous flow that it seems like the podcast has, where it's like when we close from 1 to 2 weeks later, when it comes back in, it seems like we never really stopped talking on the same day.
Can I take credit for that? That's after you started my show, right?
Yeah, we realized that, you know, before I was cutting out a piece of it and trying to keep the right. pace of conversation natural. And it was taking a lot of time. And I was thinking, you know, if we just blasted this thing out there, I would cut my time like, you know, in a third of what I was using before.
Yeah.
Plus, it was much, much cooler. Yeah. So, a big hand, please, for Mark Cookson, the National Hour, for teaching us a thing or two about talking.
It was good.
Yeah. That's where you got your swing arm, too, right?
Yeah. Actually, I think it was I became swing arm obsessed. Well, I've always liked them. This monitor arm, for example, is something that I've always had. Yeah,
that's awesome.
I'm a great believer in ARM technology. Yeah. So I guess that's the podcast
that's
for this
do
week.
It. Good podcast,
thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks to Alderman at Large Mark Cookson of Nashua.
Yep.
And hopefully we can get him back on later on.
Yeah. Why don't you call us out, Mark? This is Dave Say, graphic designer.
I'm photographer Sid Caesar.
And with us is
Mark Cookson, Alderman at Large.
And we'll see you next time. Thank you to Michael Ballar, who graciously provides the opening and outro music at www.michaelballar.com. Give him your love.
Yeah.
That's all, folks.